Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. This week, we continue our review of the Mumbrella 360 conference. We talk about radio stunts and how they can get you publicity with WSFM's Brendan Jonesy Jones, Nova's Ryan Fitzy Fitzgerald, and producer Tom Ivey, Ralph Van Dyke of Eardrum, and Mix's Ant Simpson. Before we get to conversation, just tell you about our panel, which starting furthest away from me, Ralph Van Dyke is founder of audio agency Eardrum, which operates both in Australia and the UK. You probably won't know it, but you will have heard his work. Ryan Fitzgerald of Fitzy and Whipper on Nova 96.9. You may know him from AFL, Big Brother, or the radio. He's been on Breakfast in Sydney for on Breakfast Mornings in Sydney for just a bit under a year after making a big impression on Nova's national drive time show. Tom Ivey, who someone. There are so many lookalikes for Tom, actually. Someone just outside, which I know this isn't the one that you use on the show, but someone just outside said, is that Nick Cave?
Oh, very good. That's good.
Tom is Fitzy's executive producer. He's produced FM radio shows in every state and was previously over at Oz Stereo with Kyle and Jackie O, so he understands headlines. Brendan Jonesy Jones of Jonesy and Amanda, WSFM 101.7. Now, Jones is from the Shire and has been in radio for more than 20 years. He's hosted afternoons, a national countdown show, and mornings. And then right up at this end, Ant Simpson, co-host of Ant and Sammy Lucas on Mix FM, started in regional radio before starting the drive show for ARN's Mix in January 2010, and he was paired with Sammy earlier this year. The idea is to talk about the, you know, when you create radio content that becomes the wider sort of PR stunt. So maybe let's make that starting point. And Tom, I'm going to come to you first.
Yes.
What do you start thinking about the PR first, or is it what you're going to air? Is that the most important thing?
Well, we're always looking for new ideas and thinking about what's next and what's the next thing we can do on the show that we find funny and think that listeners will find funny as well. So we start with the idea. I mean, we know that we've got to make some noise, so there's always that in the back of our heads, but it's about the idea first. And so Fitz and Whipple come into the office one day and say, what if we did this? And then it sort of snowballs from there. So we're always thinking about what's next. And so in particular with Dangy, the boys were talking on air about the world's shortest man. It popped up in the newspaper. And then it sort of snowballed from there. And then 2 months later, he was with us in
Sydney.
And at
that point in the conversation, are you thinking about what's going to go on air, though, rather than the noise outside?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's got to work for on air first and foremost, I think. So it's always good to make noise, but if it doesn't sound great on the radio, then it's a bit pointless for our listeners. So it's about what great content can we create for the listeners. And then if we get PR, then that's good.
Actually, I have to disagree with Tom there, everyone, because it was... I mean, a lot of people see these world records and they're frequently in the news, but this one sort of stood out because this guy didn't break the record. He smashed it by 5 centimetres and he was 72 years of age. So no one had discovered him. The next step was we said, why don't we... I mean, in an interview, he said that he wanted to travel. We said, well, why don't we bloody try and get him to Australia? The odds of that were very, very slim. But Tom made a few phone calls with Guinness. So, Tim, we honestly thought we weren't going to get him. But when we got the call back that he just wanted one big piss up and travel around the world, we said, sweet, come to Australia.
We'll get into that Dangy a little bit more in a minute. Let's go to Jonesy.
sorry, Tim.
Yes, Tim.
Jonesy, what's your starting point, the content or the stunt?
It's always the content. I don't think... When I was young,
when I was Ant's age, who actually is my son. It was all about, I think in your fantasy world, you imagine that the newspapers will write a story about you and the TV channels will write a story about you, but it never works out that way. If you actively go into a stunt hoping you'll get publicity, you won't get publicity. It's the stuff you don't want gets publicity, which is odd, but you try to control it, but you can't.
And Ant, I'll bring you in on that as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think you always start with the idea and try and make the radio good and then hope that it'll come. It's in the back of your mind. Like when you have an idea, let's shoot someone out of a cannon or kill someone, you think, oh, we might get press out of that. But, you don't start with that idea.
I think, and I've got two examples. Years ago when I first started at WS, I did this terrorist hotline thing, and it was just a series of just fake calls to the terrorism hotline. And at the time...
How did that go?
Well, not as well as you would imagine, Tim. But it was fake. The whole call was fake. The person from the terrorist hotline was fake. So I didn't actually ring it. But then, because this was my first day on the job at WS, and there was a lot of complaints. And people didn't see the fun side of it. And there was a series of calls. And we panicked a little bit. Well, the people around me panicked a little bit and said, we can't play any more calls. And I said, well, these calls are getting... more ridiculous. The first call sounds kind of real, but the next two calls sound ridiculous. If we don't play the next two calls, it's just going to say that it's going to sound like I'm pestering them. That got press, and it was people calling for my sacking, and that was very uncomfortable to have a newspaper article saying that I'm a goose, and it had the transcript of the actual conversation, which was kind of funny when it was written up. It looked comical, but at the time, the only thing that saved me from more fodder, because then all of a sudden there was a lot of journalists ringing me, and management said, you can't talk to anyone about this. And I said, but it's all fake. It's not even real. And they said, you can't say anything, which made it even worse. And then the Canberra bushfires happened. Hurrah! And took me off the front page. Well, page four of what it was.
Hope for a tragedy. It always happens. Yeah.
Always hope for a tragedy.
Now, Ralph, you, I guess professionally, probably more than anybody else in this room, just changes the dial all the time. As a listener, can you tell the difference between something that's kind of manufactured and something that's genuinely just been created as good content, do you think?
I think the listeners can regularly. I think the raison d'etre for a breakfast show particularly is to entertain. They've got the freedom to do anything as long as it's entertainment, pure entertainment, and the type of entertainment they choose depends on how well they know their audience and the audience they're targeting. So you can tell stuff that has been done for publicity, like the attitude, like the conversation would have gone, we'll get bad publicity, but is it worth it? I'm sure that conversation happens all the time, and you can tell as a listener. But as a listener, you think, if I like them and it's within the range of stuff that is relevant to me, then I'll let them be naughty. In fact, I'll want them to be, disruptive. And that's what you hope for. And it's harder for a brand, obviously, to do something like that because there's so many other objectives. These guys just entertainment and to be talked about.
Okay, well, let's get into a couple of case studies. We've touched on Dangy already. Tom and Fitzy, maybe this is probably a good moment to play, have a look at the slideshow, perhaps, and maybe I'll just get you two guys to sort of talk us through some of the publicity you actually did get.
Yes. So we got... Well, our coverage was really good. The day Dangy landed, it was covered on 7, 9 and 10, I think, Fitz, on the TV, and then it ended up that we got a lot of coverage internationally as well. So these are some from the international newspapers... So that's, Mail Online, obviously. They did a massive spread. The UK pages seem to love it, I think, because they love, UK obviously loves Australia. and then French press. And Dangy was having a ball because he was experiencing so many things that he hadn't seen before, Fitz.
We were conscious the whole time about his welfare. Look, we thought if this was you're getting too tiring for him, we didn't want to expose him. But this was honestly, to see his face, it was an experience of a lifetime. So, I mean, for him to promote Nepal and also his village, it was just an amazing moment for him. So, towards the end, I mean, it was at the start, it was a bit of a laugh for us, but we became quite emotional with it. And the Daily Sun, the London papers, the Rove, I don't know if you guys saw the Rove tweet. In the LA Times, Rove tweeted that he was eating his breakfast and he spat it up through his nose when he read this in the LA Times and saw us on the beach holding Dangy. If you can actually see there, Dangy was the first time he'd ever touched sand in his life. And Tim, a freak wave came out of nowhere and nearly cleaned him up, and Whipper and I had to pick him up. That was fair dinkum. That's because no one else is allowed to touch him. So only his nephew, Dolik, was allowed to pick him up. And that was the only time we did, because he was about to get cleaned up by a wave. But that went everywhere, that shot. It went in China Daily, LA Times. It was in the New York Post. So the coverage was just, it was phenomenal.
So must have one question I sort of asked myself when it was all beginning to kick off was firstly, this feels like it could be a bit exploitative. And secondly, is there actually some sort of PR crisis plan? Because as you say, he's 72, you know, I'm trying to think of a non-crew way.
If he drops off the tweet.
What if he dies?
Are you saying, just in case he dies, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Was there a plan?
Oh, look, it was...
Short answer, no.
No, well,
I don't mean it's some sort of Weekend at Bernie's type thing.
No, he had travelled before us.
And we made sure that he had two medical checkups before he came out to Australia. And he was given, it was the first time that he'd seen a doctor, and he was given a clean bill of health. And so we're confident from that side of things. I mean, there's only so much you can control. But then also we made sure that his schedule, while it was, you know, there were mainly two things on each day, so we were aware not to exhaust him. And you know, it was always, as Fitz was saying, it was first and foremost about his welfare. And, you know, this is a 72-year-old guy. We don't want to kill him, obviously. There wasn't as much negative press as we would have thought. Like, I read a lot of articles about him. There was one negative one on an online site, but the person who wrote it hadn't followed the story of, you know, like he said, we're exploiting him, but and we didn't give anything to his village, which is wrong because we gave his village a donation and all this sort of stuff. But dang, he had such a good time, and the tone, it was all about the tone, I think, Tim, as well, that we chose the right tone where it wasn't, hey, laugh at this guy. It's more like, hey, let's take a foreign visitor and show them everything we have to offer. So it was all about the tone.
We showed him, first time he ever touched sand and seen the ocean. We took him to a primary school, and the kids were asking him about his village, which is 11 people. He lives with his nephew, has two wives and seven kids. It was an amazing story. And at the end of it, we're going to show you a video in a sec. Whipper and I just did Green Day's Time of Your Life, and we actually got a bit emotional when we were putting it together. But you see in these moments in there where you actually see his face, where it just lights up and he's smiling. And we were speaking to Dolik and also his translator, Sid Lama, and Sid said that he's spent a lot of time with Dangy and he's never seen his face light up so much. So this was a moment in a 72-year-old man's life where it was life-changing, and it was a great moment.
Well, this is a good time to play the video.
It started Sunday night with a greeting of hello.
Namaste, mate.
Sorry. He shacked up at the star his journey undergo. Koalas and our sharks, excitement in his eyes. A new experience, a moment captured in time. They said it was impossible, but we just said let's try. We hope dang he had the time of his life. A million photographs of your new mates that you found. Your team, the Rabbitohs, a new member is crowned. Meaning a class of kids to educate Nepal. For what it's worth, that day you stood 10 feet tall. It's something unpredictable when you got on that flight. We hope dang he had the time of his life.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dangy on the drums.
A trip that did affect us all, the friendship that we find. We hope Dangy had the time of his life. said it was impossible, but we just said let's try. We hoped dang he had the time of his life.
There we go.
Yeah, we always got to get them to do a little sting at the end there for us. So,
well, let's talk about a couple of other examples of stuff where the on-air content has found a kind of bigger audience. Jonesy, the underwater wedding.
And the underwater the breaking the underwater broadcast for the longest, and that was funny in a way.
Oh, so no wedding at all?
No wedding at all. No, that's been done before, Tim, a million times. The thing about
an underwater wedding?
Yeah, no, it was it was just the longest radio broadcast underwater, and the brief was one of the sales guys came up to one of our meetings and pitched, as sales guys do, some idea so they can get their client on air, and they said, oh, you know, ProDive want to do this thing, you guys can broadcast underwater. And I said, well, Doug Morrow did that in 1987. You know, big deal. What else can we do? And we started... So here was a case where we had the client, had some money they wanted to spend, and then we started... for some reason, I just mentioned, I wonder what the longest time someone broadcast underwater for is. And funnily enough, someone has tried to do it, and it was a woman over at Community Radio in England, of all places, so clearly better funded than we are, had done it for 3 hours in a tank. And I said, well, can we possibly do it for 3 hours in a tank? So on air, it started with me suggesting that, you know, we should do an underwater broadcast. And Amanda sort of saying, no, I don't want to do that, which she didn't want to do. And we got ProDive, and then the Sydney Aquarium sort of heard it, and it was a build it as they will come sort of thing. They came along. As far as getting publicity for it, when we actually smashed the record, another community radio station in England... So the press we got out of it was on none. We got absolutely no press whatsoever. So we're at Sydney Aquarium.
Do you blame your marketing and PR team?
Oh, look, I don't. You know, I don't.
Yes.
I don't know, Tim. I think that for some reason, the relationship that we have with newspapers and TV, I don't know. We must have killed someone in a past life. But I swear I could skin someone alive, wear a flesh suit of their skin, and they wouldn't write about it. Like, John Laws broke a glass on 2SM this morning, and for some reason that was online and in the paper. But as far as our underwater broadcast, not a mention. And I think the most galling thing about it was, after we did all of that, Channel 9 News, when another English community radio station decided to break our record that we'd set, I don't know where these guys get their resources, Channel 9 put it on news as saying, oh, and in other news, the lighter side, in England, in Essex, a community radio station has broken the record set for the underwater record, and they said, set by an Australian radio station. Peter Overton is a friend of mine. You know, what the hell? So, you know, I give up. I have no idea.
No, and I'm suddenly realising why I have weddings on my mind as well. Mary Mamuela.
Yeah, this was one we did a couple of years ago. Genuinely just met a 24-year-old Italian girl called Manuela at a pub, and she was really lovely. And she just said how much she's enjoying the country and how she would love to stay. So we literally just had this joke of an idea. What if we helped her find a husband and then she stayed in the country? Now, not even realising how illegal that is. So we started... innocently, for content, not for thinking we would get any publicity, marry Manuela. So we put the call out, would you like to marry someone, a beautiful Italian girl, she was very attractive. We did, the only rule was we had to decide how it all happened. So we found a short list of guys, all the dates happened at Macca's, different Macca's around the, it wasn't a sponsored thing. And we had the dates, we whittled it down to a pro golfer, like a normal guy, like a really nice guy, former pro golfer, really, I was like, 35 years old, she was 24. They quite liked each other. And then we had a classy radio wedding at Sizzler on the Gold Coast with Elvis marrying them. But what we didn't realise, see, we always intended to do a commitment ceremony. We just thought, oh, you know, we'll say we're marrying her and whatever. But people heard it and it turned into a bit of a controversy because we were advocating, ruining the sanctity of marriage and we were breaking a few federal laws. So today tonight call. And we thought, oh, surely they'll do a positive spin on this. So They came out, Today Tonight came out, and it was exactly like something you'd see out of Frontline. They were so nice to us. I'd never been interviewed by Today Tonight. They were so nice to us, all great, wonderful. They got shots of the couple walking down the beach. It was just perfect. Later that night, it was heaven. It was everything we asked for. The shot started off with, this young Italian girl has met the man of her dreams. It's young love walking down the beach. It freezes, goes black and white. There's a lightning sound effect. He goes, but it's ruining the sanctity of marriage. cuts to Elvis in Sizzler. and then us with our like radio station logo behind us going, yeah! And they interviewed us and they had some guy like from the church saying it's ruining marriage. And we were like, this is heaven. This is the best thing that could possibly happen. They dated for a few months. It was only a commitment ceremony. And then, so it was great. So the whole thing on Today Tonight was, they're ruining marriage. They're breaking all the laws. Cuts back to Matt White at the desk, and he just throws away, oh, we should mention that was a commitment ceremony. And moves on. So basically, there was no story at all, but we got everything we wanted out of it.
And Ralph, you
and exploited a young Italian man who might be in trouble with the government.
Did you get deported in the end?
I don't know, to be honest.
Who cares?
Clearly, the duty of care just finishes after the show finishes.
Oh, our ratings went up that book.
No, Ralph, I suppose your stunt was of a slightly different nature in that you actually did get free PR through radio for your client Strepsils. We'll play some audio in a moment, but maybe just set it up for us what we're about to hear.
Yeah, I guess we have to always try and integrate a brand into the stunt or whatever the thing is, but you know, we're always trying to disrupt and entertain, but because it's a brand, it has to be relevant. And our client Strepsils wanted to promote the fact that you need to take Strepsils at the first sign of a sore throat, you know, not just when you got a severe one. So when you get that first little tickle. And so it made sense that we use radio because that's where people talk and you can hear when they've got a sore throat. So we cast a bunch of actors around the country to call in talkback stations during the time that the campaign was running about take at the first sign of a sore throat. And they'd call in various shows and involve themselves in whatever the subject was, whether it's the crime rate in Bankstown or whatever. And we go, yeah, I'm just ringing about the crime rate in in Bankstown. Sorry, mate. I got a sore throat. I've got to take a Strepsils. Yeah. And the presenter, being the super professional that the presenter was say, you sort yourself out. I mean, John Laws even. Yes, we got John. You're here. He even plays along with it.
Okay, well, let's take a listen. We'll go maybe back for the first minute and a half or so.
I just hope she knows more about climate than she does about grammar. Hiya, Gary.
Hey, mate, how are you?
Excellent, thank you.
I'm out in Blacktown, mate, and there's been a couple of, I don't know if any of your listeners out here know about it, there's been a couple of break-ins in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
If anyone else in the Blacktown area has anything to say on it, and why we don't hear about these crime things in the paper.
Oh, that's a good question. As a matter of fact, there are murders that occur in this city that are placed on page 10 of some newspapers.
Ridiculous. Oh, sorry, mate, I've got a sore throat coming on. Sorry, mate, I'll have to have a Strepsil or something.
You're right. You're with us, Gary?
Yeah, I'm back with you, mate.
Okay.
I just wanted to make that point with you, mate.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, all right. Have a good one.
All right. Get your throat better. Dr. Vic says, Chris, great program, and booked on the...
...who just happened to drive in here. Andrew's online right now. G'day, Andrew.
Yeah, g'day, Ben.
What can you see?
Oh, a bit of chaos out here this afternoon, sir.
Where are you?
excuse me. Need a Strepsil there. Sitting in Kirribilli, I'd say the traffic is south.
So it's an unpaid live read by the listeners as opposed to the presenters. And I mean, it wasn't designed for PR reasons at all. In fact, the only reason it became public was because you wheedled it out of me in a podcast. And you were saying, well, no one ever innovates on radio. Where's the innovation? I said, they do all the time. You just don't hear about it. I said, prove it. So I had to call the client and say, can I tell everyone?
And then no. I seem to remember the client let you enter some awards as well.
They did, yes, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, what are the chances of it going public? Yeah, thanks.
I would have liked to see in the campaign for Anusol wipes.
It's harder to do on air, isn't it? Yeah.
Well,
so I guess, yeah, the main difference is that we, for a brand, it's got to be relevant. It can't just be a stunt. And obviously, you know, you're not going to sponsor, you're not going to get, I don't know, Mini to sponsor your stunt. Dangy coming over.
Well, it's a good chance to maybe take a question or two from the audience if anybody wants to do so. And I think we probably have a roving microphone somewhere in the room. So wave a hand if you would like to throw in with anything. There's a hand at the front here. If you wouldn't mind telling us who you are and where you're from, please.
I'm Lisa. I work for Beam, which is an alcohol company, and we're finding it harder and harder to get PR for our brands. So I was just wondering if you had any advice or if you'd seen good examples that you could let us know about.
I think, you know what, I think John Laws did it so well with the when he was with Jim Beam and then he changed to Wild Turkey, which I always found extraordinary how you can change your favourite drink and no one bats an eyelid. But he would just give people Jim Beam. And I know there are laws about what you can give away as far as alcohol goes, but on WS we have a competition in the morning called the Magnificent Seven, and if you go all the way, get all the seven questions right, I actually pay for it myself. I say, and we give you a carton of your favourite drop. So I'd say, hey, Fitzy, what's your favourite drop?
Jim Beam.
No, no, with the I'm not going to buy a carton of Jim Beam. I'm not made of money, contrary to reports. But so basically, I think that sort of stuff, and there are laws about giving alcohol to people that sound like they're under 25, but by law, you can actually... Well, apparently that's the law, isn't it? Is anyone up on the law here? But you can... my understanding
is... I don't know why you're looking at me.
Because I'm sure I gave a 10-year-old a carton of beer last week, so I might get in trouble for this. But that, I think that's... And it's such a small thing. It's a bottle of booze. But who here likes a free bottle of booze? It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah. we just did a parody, actually, of Carly Rae Jepsen's song, Call Me Maybe. We did... Because it's such a female song, we got an email saying, can you bloke it up a bit? Because us blokes can't listen to it. So we did an Aussie blokes version. It's just had 1.2 million hits on YouTube. And we mentioned Bacardi Breezer in it. Now, we've been given a shitload of Bacardi Breezers at Nova. But integration like that seems to work. But like Jonesy said, with alcohol, I'm all for it as well to give it away. But unfortunately, you can't. And it's really hard to promote, especially on a breakfast slot, because it's... And I know most of you do drink at that time of the morning, but it's family, you know, so it's a bit harder at that time.
And did you want to come in with a PR stunt to flog some booze?
I've got this Italian girl who wants to stay in the country.
And I've got this underwater broadcaster.
Let's take another question. And again, if you can tell us who you are, please.
Hi, I'm Alison from Impact Communications. We just mentioned that breakfast radio is about family. I'm just wondering if there's ever a point you guys get to where you go, you know what, that's a bridge too far. We need to pull back from here.
Tom, you used to work with Kyle and Jackie O.
Definitely. Pretty much every morning.
We're definitely conscious of it. And, you know, you've got to think that, you know, there's mothers and kids in the car, especially for... I mean, Nova's a younger demographic station as well, so we're very conscious of that. We always have to be. And I mean, Whipper and I are a couple of blokes that like to have a laugh more than anyone and can be quite crude off air. But when you're in the car and you know, families are driving to school and work, we have to be very, very conscious of it.
I think the audience, though, we've conditioned audiences with smut. Smut is actually swearing. And I remember... when your predecessors, Merrick and Rosso, they used to like to swear a fair bit. You know, like you'd hear them just in normal conversation. Tim would say something, oh, and this shit's been going on. You know, I would never swear on air, because I think when a listener... like, we had a guy once, Amanda did this great sketch with the late Patrick Swayze and reenacted the scene from Ghost, making, you know, the pottery with Patrick Swayze. And it was such a great bit, and there's references to jugs and stuff like that, and it sounds pretty saucy. And this guy... my kid's listening to that in the car. How dare you guys do that? And I sort of corresponded with him. I said, how old's your daughter? And he said, oh, she's 10 years of age. And I said, mate, if your daughter can pick up that sort of innuendo, you know, this is more about you being upset. Your daughter isn't going to pick this sort of stuff up. So I think there's a long line between swearing and actual just innuendo.
Ralph, where do you see the line as being?
I think the line is... knowing your audience, going back to the very beginning. I think if these guys, their job is to know their audience, to know the thresholds that they can go beyond. And if they go past it, then they're going to lose audience, which means the radio station can't sell as many people, which means they don't make as much money. I mean, it's a business decision. But the great thing is they're very good at knowing their audience. And when they do stunts, they know, okay, well, it's a calculated risk. And then for brands to be involved in that, like, for example, you're asking about the alcohol, how to get alcohol into the breakfast show. I mean, it's just these guys know their audience, know that on a Friday night this is how they socialise. So to let them tell you what their audience does and how you can get involved in that, it may not be during the the actual breakfast show, but to put something on for them. It's about knowing your audience intimately as a radio station, and that's the threshold.
Tom, you're, as a producer, you're actually the one who's responsible, effectively. Has there ever been a time where you've actually felt that you're not in control of the people who are on air?
Oh, God. Well, the show fits in Whipper there. The guys do know the boundaries, and occasionally, you know, it might get overstepped, but the boys are pretty good in reining it back in. And if Whipper says something outlandish, then Fitzy will chime in and try and balance it out, which is always good. We find, for us, it's more often than not the callers that give us the most amount of trouble, you know, with, you know, swearing or being filthy or things like that. So we obviously use, you know, we're in delay, and so we can get around those situations that way. We're a pretty friendly show, I think.
Tim, the other thing as well, and you've got to give it to Kyle and Jackie O with the success that they've had. And Kyle, his approach to radio, and this is what he's always been honest and upfront, and it can be quite brutal sometimes. But we talk about being smutty on air and stuff like that. It's been successful for those guys. Mm. You know, we're in a market where a lot of people think, oh, you can't touch it. Those guys have been number one for such a long time, and it's the road that they've gone down, and it has been successful. So there still is a market out there. It's just the way that you want to be perceived.
And have you ever gone too far, do you think?
Oh, there was a sketch about the Chilean miners that wasn't ideal, but where we got Chilean hate groups set up. But apart from that, when we sort of, I think the accent was Mexican that we did. But anyway, but apart from that, one thing, it's just about knowing your audience. We're on Mix, so we are always thinking about the kids in the cars. And we will cover sex, but we'll do it later in the show after 6 o'clock. But you have to be careful. It's about what your parents want their kids to know. So it's not just about smut or sex. One of the most controversial things that happened on our show, where we got more emails than anything, mums and dads hated us, was when Kelly Clarkson told everyone Santa Claus wasn't real.
Yeah.
And we missed it. And it went to air, and that's not ideal. Because everyone loves Kelly Clarkson, and she just told us that Santa's not real. So that's the worst case. And that was really controversial. It's about knowing your audience. And so we know when we talk about the Easter Bunny, obviously the Easter Bunny's real. Fitzy, the Easter Bunny is real. Yeah. his white eyes just there.
Let's see if there's another question from the room. I see a hand there.
Hi, Justine from Air New Zealand. I was fortunate to win a digital radio yesterday. So I just want to know your opinion on digital radio and where it's going, whether it's going to really fragment the market again, or whether you think we're going to get these niche pockets of... I was very disappointed to see ABC went into sort of an unearthed territory and not really expanded different areas, so I'd love to hear your opinion on digital radio.
Ralph, you've made some ads for all four to promote of them, digital radio. Yeah,
they all four looked at me straight away and said, you
what's
tell
digital
them,
radio? You
tell them, what the hell?
A digital radio is like AM stereo, isn't it?
I think the digital radio is one of the future, I'd say. You know, radio, the ultimate radio is going to be a hybrid of digital, online and analog. So you can choose what platform to listen to at whatever time. And if you want to interact with the station, I mean, the best thing about digital radio will be that there's a path back directly to the station. There'll be a tag button, which you can respond to immediately after hearing an ad or a bit of content. So you can do something immediately. So there's some great advantages for advertisers. As far as listeners are concerned, it's better quality, more interactive, and it'll be on more devices. As far as fragmenting the audience goes, I don't think so. I think that you'll have more choice as a listener. It's fantastic. I've got 3 digital radios around the house, and we listen to different things on different days of the week on the different stations. If, you know, just like coffee or an AM station in FM, in digital, you know. So there's lots of really good functional reasons for having it. The audience will fragment regardless of whether digital is an option or not. There's going to be so much choice available for listeners with online music and everything. Radio has to evolve, and this is a great way of doing it. And for advertisers to have an improved way of getting to the audience, it's even better.
And let me just widen that question to the rest of the panel. in terms of the widening platforms, video, creating video content, how important a part of the process is that going to become?
I think that's incredibly important. I think you look at the rise of YouTube, in the time that I've been doing breakfast at WS, I was thinking, we were talking about this the other day, years ago when you wanted to get, say, Robert Shaw's speech from Jaws, you know, you'd have to ring the producer and say, have you got Jaws on video? And he'd say, well, I don't know. And then, can you go to the video store and get it? It was this whole thing. This morning, we managed to pull off an Apia commercial, the commercial about the lady getting the caravan, just for a purpose of a demonstration. It took 40 seconds to get that off YouTube. So I think for video online content is, a radio station can probably live and die by it.
It also opens up more on-air content. I mean, you guys do it all the time, but bits you wouldn't normally do on air because it's too visual, there's now an excuse to do it because it's implied that everyone will go to YouTube and watch it. So when Alicia Silverstone came out and said she was feeding her baby from mouth to mouth, and it was pretty disgusting. My previous co-host Bex and I, we fed each other lunch into each other's mouths. Now, that sounded awkward on air, but knowing that people could go and watch it, the Mix website melted down, and you wouldn't have done that normally, and the program director wouldn't have let you do that normally because it would be too visual or whatever. But,
Yeah, you go for
it. Sorry, just probably the biggest obstacle that we also have in radio is no one bloody knows what we look like. So we have a lot of TV marketing campaigns so people know, can put a face to the name. These videos these days you are twice as powerful. Sorry, Tony, who's our marketing manager in here, are twice as powerful because people are watching your videos and then they know, then they can associate a face to a name. So we're getting recognised a lot more on the street just from some of these parodies that we're doing and putting up on YouTube and getting a lot of hits for. So it's been very successful.
Tom, how much of your time do you actually spend thinking about the video side? The parody songs, obviously, is
well, online for us now goes sort of hand in hand. So we'll think of a great stunt to do for the radio, and then we'll work out the best way that we can capture it for online. So online for us is super important, and it's sort of, I mean, the good thing is that if you've got if your talent, can already embracing, the various, like video and all that sort of thing. If they're embracing that, then they sell it really passionately on air, and they'll always be thinking of, I mean, sometimes Fitz, you've come with an idea that's probably better for a video,
yep.
And then we sort of try and work out the radio aspect. So and as Fitz was saying, the marketing, it's a great marketing tool for us. And we had a second video that we've done get 1 million views overnight, which is great. So it's those sorts of things that, and some year, I mean, you did one the other day that we didn't put much effort into to film, but then that got to 1 mil, and then you sort of start thinking, well, should we shoot these better and better? And because it just seems like everyone is going to, more and more people are going to check it out online when you push it, aren't they?
Hi there, I'm Stu. I'm also from Jim Beam. I grew up listening to BBC Radio in the UK with not one single ad on it. And when I came to Australia, I was just mortified by the number of ads on TV. And I thought Nova did a brilliant thing having more than two ads on a row, because I could put up with two ads and then the stuff comes back. And you've obviously moved away from that. I wondered how that had affected you. And also wondered if there were more interesting ways that you think you can integrate brands into content rather than through so many ads.
I'm so with you, big fella. So with you. But you, I mean, we are commercial radio, and that's we totally understand that's the industry that we're in. We're always conscious with the amount of stuff that we do on our show, because we try to get ourselves involved with the clients as much as we can, because we want to make it work just as much as you guys do. But we don't want to come across as a show that's one big ad, because people see straight through that. And it's a fine line. It's a very fine line. I know what you're saying, because, growing up myself, I was always the same. Too many ads and I just turned straight over. So people are always flicking over their dial. But we do have the understanding that this is a business and we work in commercial radio. It's
Ralph,
called commercial radio.
I wonder how much the problem is just many of the ads are pretty terrible.
That is a big part of it. And that's, the clients have as much to blame, I think, as creatives. I mean, the clients choose who makes their ads and how much they invest in them. As far as ad break lengths, listeners, 16 million listeners tune into commercial radio a week, and part of the deal that they've the deal that they've done with their radio stations. You give me really cool, free, entertaining content and music, and I'll listen to your ads for a couple of minutes, you know, every 20 minutes or whatever. And we accept that. It's part of the landscape. If you're brought up on BBC Radio, then it'll be more apparent. Like when I came to Australia, the live reads stood out like a sore thumb because I thought, what? How can they do this? But I'm used to it now, and it's part of the landscape. Listeners put up with it. And for the good ads, they'll actually be involved in it and actually get something out of it. And that's obviously the aim.
I think the thing I've noticed about this, I was in a cab just recently, and I got in the cab and he was listening to WS, and you always get there's always a sense of satisfaction when you get in the cab and he's listening to you and not some Arabic station or 2GB. And so I got into the cab and we're driving along and he's listening to us, and then as soon as the ad, so it started with a promo for the station, ad break, goes into a Queen song, he flicks the channel over to Mix, and I'm sort of thinking, and that's in an ad break. And so he's listening to all those ads. That finishes with the Mix promo into a song, and then he flicked over to 2GB, which is in an ad break. By about the time he flicked over to 2CH, he was just searching around, and I said, do you realise what station do you actually listen to? And he says, I'm just listening for information. And I said, but do you realise you've listened to about 20 minutes worth of ads? And he said, no, I haven't. I've been listening to information. And I said, no, you've been listening to ads. And that's the new thing, I think, with integration is the big word in radio at the moment. I think listeners will turn out, well, they're not even turning out from big blocks of ads anymore, as demonstrated here, but you can sneak in, and we used to hate doing live reads as content, and I think it's kind of illegal as well with cash for comment, but you can back announce a song and say, you know, WSFM, Jonesy and Amanda, looking forward to the Sydney Morning Herald this weekend, they've got a great story about Rebecca Brooks. You know, you can put that in there. No one's going to punch out from an ad because it's like 2 seconds. Like, by the time that's gone, it's absorbed and that's it.
Please thank our fabulous panel.
Thank you.
That's all for our Mumbrella 360 podcast for this week. Tune in next time for more of the same. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.